Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mulligan Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the score hotline. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you are the man, and you have the Mach 3.0 out, and you have the Bears trading down. Was that a nod to the possibility, or do you now believe the Bears are rolling out of number 9 and trying to pick up the draft capital that they used already?
Well, if you do multiple mock drafts, and I'm going to have one more before the draft, I think you've got to mix it up a little bit. If you republish basically the same mock draft every time, what's the point? So a lot of people have talked about that possibility, and I think I've been pretty clear with you guys. I think if that is something that they consider, they can't trade down too far. You really don't want to move too far below number 9. They moved one spot down from 9 a year ago. So I just put something together that, you know, is it going to happen? Probably not. Is it feasible? I think it is. And then it also had them taking an offensive lineman, which is something a lot of people have talked about, and certainly something that we can't discount and has to be a possibility. I mean, you go back and you look at, okay, well, what happened in Kansas City where they had a quarterback that some people have drawn parallels to Caleb Williams with? Well, Mahomes was a star, and the only struggles he's had in the postseason have been when they got overmanned, outmatched up front on the offensive line. They could not hold up in the trenches. So would that lead him to look offensive line? I think it's a possibility that has been discussed, is worthy of discussion, and therefore you could land with an offensive tackle in a mock draft.
So you have them moving down to 11 to take Troy Fontenot from Washington, which is certainly possible. I don't think it's likely, especially not if Neighbors and Adunze are still on the board, according to your mock draft. What I found also interesting, Brad, is that do you really think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to drop to 6? And if they do, regardless of your mock draft and publishing your third one and all that stuff, if Marvin Harrison is on the board at number 6, how compelled might the Bears be to want to move up to get him, as much as that would cost them a lot?
Yeah, I think it would cost them a bunch. An answer I don't have right now is how do they have their wide receiver board stacked? And then what's the gap between those players? Okay, so we'd be making an assumption that Harrison's 1 on their board. I don't think that's you're not going out on a limb, but it's possible they have them ordered differently. But if Harrison's there at 1, what's the gap between him and 2, whether it's Adunze or Neighbors? And if it's minimal, I don't like the trade-up idea. They are short on draft capital this year, although they can point to proven veteran players that they've got on the roster right now that they turned those picks into. Why not set yourself up with really extra draft capital that they already have for next year? And the Giants, they might want to stay put and get the best receiver they can have. That's a team that you look back over the last 3-4 seasons, and the New York Giants have really struggled at the wideout position. So could they trade down with the Bears and still get one at 9, I guess. It's certainly fun to talk about. I think the Chargers have to take an offensive lineman at 5 if they don't trade out. It just seems like Harbaugh's identity, and they've certainly had some issues there. So I would look at LA to take an offensive lineman or potentially entertain a trade down.
Brad, if they're going for an offensive tackle, wouldn't that suggest then that they have lost faith in Braxton Jones? Or, you know, I mean, I don't know if he's any good. I think he's better in pass blocking than run blocking, but I think they have invested a lot of starts in the guy, if you know what I'm saying. So it makes you wonder if there's another step for him where he could be an improving player. And I really don't know what they think of him or how they have him rated. Is there any chance they may look at him and think, like they did with Justin Fields, let's give him another year and see if he can get it done, and if not, we'll replace him next year? Or is that too dangerous an idea given the fact that they're going to draft Caleb Williams with the first overall pick?
I don't think that's a dangerous idea at all. You look at how he played this past season, and was he at a Pro Bowl level? No. Was he terrible? No. Like, he looked like a, you know, guy that most Sundays was sort of mid-tier, and he was probably a little bit better when Tevin Jenkins was on the field. We know that Tevin missed a little bit of time, and I think, guys, that if Caleb Williams can do what I believe he's capable of, and that's getting the ball out in a timely manner most of the time, you're going to see the quarterback make the five offensive linemen look a little bit better than they are, if that happens. Now, if Caleb is holding on to the ball and running around and doing all that stuff, that's going to make things challenging for those guys. But the way Justin Fields played at times created issues for the offensive lineman, and that's the kind of thing that creates issues for the best offensive lineman in the league. When the quarterback has the ball for a long period of time, when the quarterback struggles moving from one to two to three at times, that can make it a bigger challenge for the lineman. So would taking an offensive lineman in round one signify that they've lost faith in Braxton Jones? I don't know that I'd go there. That would signal, hey, they see a guy that they believe is going to be a big step up and a guy that'll be a building block for the future.
So Chop Robinson became the latest edge rusher to visit Hallis Hall on Monday, Brad, according to reports. And you look at the edge rushers they've brought into the facility, and you do wonder if it appeals to Ryan Poles to get the number one offensive player in the draft, if that's Caleb Williams, and the number one defensive player in the draft, if it falls that way, and it certainly could. How tempting might that be for the Bears? And are we, you know, obviously looking at wide receivers, and we're talking about offensive tackles and all those things, but which one of those edge rushers that have come through do you think would tempt them the most?
Well, I think that if Atlanta stays put at eight, there's a better chance than not that the Falcons would select a defensive player. You look at that Falcons roster right now, and they need help getting after the quarterback. Could they make a play for a wide receiver if one's sitting there? Yeah, if they've got a huge grade on a wide receiver, I suppose they could go that route. But right now, if I had to venture a guess, Atlanta's taking a defensive player at eight. With the Bears, some of these defensive guys that have come in to visit, I look at some of those guys, and Chap Robinson is one of them. Is like, well, here's a guy they're getting more info on in the event they do find themselves in some type of trade down scenario. I think nine is probably a little too rich for him. But it only takes, you know, one team to love a guy. You could have 31 teams feeling like a guy's a late first round pick, and one team saying, yeah, he's worthy of something anywhere around, you know, 10th overall. And that's all it's going to take for him to be drafted that high. I think that's got to be a consideration, and I think you're not just talking about the edge rushers, though, David. I think you got to include the Texas defensive tackle Byron Murphy in that conversation, an interior defensive lineman who most people I've spoken to feel like he's the best in the class, and it's a class that's probably a little thin on high-end talent. You know, it's very difficult to find people on the planet that are capable athletically of playing that three technique position. Illinois' Johnny Newton, certainly another one, but I think Murphy's ahead of him right now, and I would certainly include his name in any discussion of defensive players that could be in consideration for Ryan Poles and the Bears in the first round.
So obviously the voluntary portion of the program has begun, and we're seeing teams around the league begin their voluntary, and I'm using air quotes, off-season programs. Supposedly in Minnesota, Justin Jefferson, a no-show, looking for a new contract, wants to get paid. Great player, understandable, I suppose. Are there any no-shows for the Bears, to your knowledge? Is there anyone interested in getting money before they turn up? And back to Jefferson, I mean, there's a lot of $25 million receivers floating around the NFL these days. And, you know, the Bears traded a fourth-round pick for a guy that's going to be a $23 million cap hit. Wouldn't getting a receiver be getting ahead of the game in terms of trying to be able to manage your cap moving forward?
That's a great point, because you look at the salary cap and you look at the franchise tag figure for wide receivers this year, and that figure is probably going to climb for next year when you consider that one way or another, you're likely to see new contracts for some wide receivers, Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, yep. Brandon Ayuk. You know, if those guys get bank, I'm talking, you know, a couple Brinks trucks full of money, then you're going to see that tag number spike up a little bit. And at some point, right, the Bears are going to have to pay DJ Moore, right? I mean, he's got 2 years left on his contract, so there's no rush in that. And they've got him. I mean, he was a value producer for him last year when you consider what they got from him statistically and in the locker room and what they paid him. So they're going to have to address his contract, give him a raise, add more years to it. And if you're doing that, that just makes it somewhat difficult for me to believe you're going to be in a spot where you're then paying Keenan Allen a ton of money beyond this year. And it's easy to move in that direction without Allen if you draft a wide receiver in a year, which is, I mean, it's loaded at this position, guys.
So, Brad, your Mock 3.0 has J.J. McCarthy going third to the Patriots, and I wonder what you're hearing about just how far up he is skyrocketing. He seems to be the player in this draft that is equivalent to, like, last year's Anthony Richardson. Not quite sure who is going to be fixated on taking him, but you figure somebody will be. What are you hearing about J.J. McCarthy?
Yeah, I mean, it's people talk about a bunch of things with him, the makeup, the athleticism. I think he's got the processing ability, right? I mean, he's sort of sneaky athletic. He can pick him up and put him down when he's on the move. He can make plays on the run. He was asked to do some stuff at Michigan that I think translates relatively well to the pro game. And people talk about the winning, and I know, you know, you've got two distinct camps. You've got the camp that says, you know, that a team's record is part of a quarterback's resume, right? And then you've got other people that say that, you know, that the team's record has nothing to do with the strength or lack of strength in of the quarterback. But he did nothing but win for the Wolverines, and I think he's going to go pretty high. I would guess he's going to be gone in the top, oh boy, I mean six anyway. It's going to be really interesting, because I think Jaden Daniels is going to go second to Washington, and so then does Elliott Wolf, who's running the draft in New England, follow in the footsteps of his Hall of Fame father, Ron, and get a quarterback, right, to try to reboot things in New England. And then who's coming for a quarterback at four with Arizona? Or does someone do that? The Vikings appear to have set themselves up to do that. But we'll have to see. I have a hard time believing Denver gets up to four just because the Broncos are a little short on draft capital. But certainly Sean Payton would really like to get a quarterback out of this class. So it's going to be really interesting. We got a little more than a week to go. There's good reason for all the excitement and optimism.
And we know the Bears go quarterback at number one overall. That is a fait accompli. When you look at number nine, we have heard mention, you know, edge, we've heard wide receiver, and we've heard offensive tackle. If indeed they take a player there, is that their shopping list for the rest of the draft? Do you believe they're going to come out of the draft with, you know, whether they add picks or not, with an edge, with an offensive tackle, and with a wide receiver after the quarterback?
I think it's a good idea. I think it's something you kind of keep on your shopping list. I believe that the depth in this draft at wide receiver and on the offensive line would make both of those two positions a possibility in round three. You know, I looked at some down-the-line edge guys last week. I think it was in my mailbag. I can't remember where it ran. That's a possibility. Guys, I don't want to rule out the idea of Torrey Taylor, the Iowa punter, at some point. He does things.
Hey,
yeah, I mean, Molly's guy.
He's the Caitlin Clark of punters.
He is.
It's Iowa. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable what he can do to control the football when it lands. Like it's just unbelievable. I talked for a while. I think it was back during the Senior Bowl. I talked with LeVar Woods, who had a very brief stop at Hallis Hall as a linebacker, but played throughout the league, and he's been the special teams coach at Iowa for a while. And it was just kind of amazing talking to him about Taylor and how he really kind of just grew his craft one year after the next at Iowa. I mean, you know, little outside of the box to use a mid-round pick on a punter. Yes, the Bears once used a second-round pick on Todd Sauerbrunn, who had vanity license plates that read Hangtime. That was back in the mid-90s. But if you get a guy like that and he performs like you believe he can perform, I mean, you've got that position rock solid.
Locked
with
down.
One of the better guys in the league for 7-8 years.
It's a great point. I hope they do it. It'd be a lot of fun to talk about. Brad, Bill Belichick was at Guaranteed Rate Field over the weekend. He was at Northwestern lacrosse practice in the locker room talking to Kelly Monte Hiller's team. Did he make a stop at Hallis Hall? Can they use any of his wisdom? Any rumors there? What was he doing
in
town?
Did he stay at your house?
Yes. Did you guys confer?
No. I mean, he went to see the Sox. They're horrible. Oh, my God, are they bad.
Wow, that's as enlightening as your mock draft.
Their offense is worse than, like, the worst Bears offense I've seen in 24 years. And, guys, I've got an advanced degree in identifying bad offensive football.
Yes. It's so true.
You do. Is that from Mizzou, too?
It's unbelievable.
Uh-huh. All right, buddy.
I don't know if he stopped at Hallis Hall. Okay. But that's a good question. I hope that Northwestern lacrosse team's better than the Sox.
They are. It would hard to be worse.
Okay. You're the best, Big.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
You got to love it when there's a gratuitous shot.
Oh, he'll take it. Yeah, he'll definitely take it. Did you see that picture with Ozzie and Belichick that he put out there? And Ozzie talked about taking a long time before he asked him for a photo. And Bill Belichick was there as a guest of Tony La Russa. And friends and relatives were at the game.
Yeah, that's. I mean,
listen, the Sox. They are attracting big time celebrities. Bill Belichick on Friday night. Simone Biles.
I saw
Saturday.
Her husband throughout the first ball.
Yep.
Did you happen to see Gronk throw out the first pitch at the Patriots Day game. You know, the Boston Marathon was yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was really funny. He was like the grand marshal of the Boston Marathon. And so he went to throw out the first pitch, and he did like a Michael Kopech. He tried to throw
it. Oh, I did see that. That was
so it was like him. It was him, his version of a spike. It was very funny.
Spiking the baseball into the
ground.
Not out of disgust, just out of having fun.
No, just out of his gronkness. Yeah. So that was great stuff. 312-644-6767. What do you think of the draft? Are you okay with the trade down? Is it beneficial to trade down? Are you concerned that they're going to pass on someone here? You know, can you use up all your draft capital and then say, you know, we don't have enough draft capital? It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
It happens every year, and I think that's the hardest part of being a general manager or a leader in any space is – you're doing the homework, you're getting the correct information, you have a group of really good scouts that are giving that to you. If that goes against the narrative, you gotta stand up against
it. And you're getting killed
that.
Like in the instant, but you know, I'm playing the long game. This is going to work out eventually.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of Ryan Poles. He was on the Pat McAfee Show, and it's true. I think that oftentimes, there is a narrative about the draft, about who's a great player and who's going to get picked where. And then when that doesn't – excuse me, my microphone needs oiling. When that doesn't play out, Mr. David, people look at it and think, oh, they overreached or, oh, they missed on this guy. It is a difficult thing because there are so many draft nicks, so many people – offering their expertise on how the draft should drop.
Well, there are three seasons in the NFL calendar. There's the regular season, there are the playoffs, and then there's draft season. And I think what you see at this time of the year as we get to, you know, 10 days or so before the draft, 9 days before the draft, is this is a time where you lean into, not much is going on, there's some visits, and you lean into these draft nicks, as you say.
Yeah.
And the people that cover the league speculating, talking, trying to maybe get people to believe something that could be happening. A team is leaning in one direction. And let's face it, it may or may not be true. It may or may not be valid.
Do you have a better word for draftnik? Would you prefer like prognosticator?
No, I think that draftnik is something that we've become part of our regular
vernacular.
We talk about the third season in the NFL calendar. And after this, things quiet down considerably. Teams get their roster. They go into the summers. They do their OTAs, and they start to plan for training camp. So it won't be long before we're at that phase. But I think in the next 10 days or so, you're going to hear and see a lot of different possibilities and a lot of different ideas floated to see maybe how they land. And maybe see what people, you know, Ryan Poles is not going to be part of that. But I wonder if some of this information coming out, I wonder if some of the people being invited for visits are there because the Bears want people to believe a certain thing.
Oh, that happens all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, that's part of the whole smokescreen with a draft. There's a couple things you can count on, you know, in any draft, the quarterback position is going to be built up. Because of the need, because so many people are desperate to get a quarterback, and there are plenty of teams in this draft desperate to get a quarterback that do not have a legitimate starting quarterback. And I'm thinking Minnesota lost their quarterback. Denver got rid of their quarterback. There are teams that aren't in a position to take a quarterback that need a quarterback. And so When you evaluate different positions in the draft, and the draft is such a, you know, you break down round by round. The first round is about a 50% hit percentage, mm-hmm. which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
But the quarterback position is even tougher because there are so many different elements that go into success as a quarterback, not the least of which is landing with the right team and the right coaches and people capable of helping you develop in that position.
And also, here's also something to keep an eye on and worth discussing, especially this morning. because the quarterback position is always going to be prioritized. Teams are always going to want to get that guy, and maybe in recent years it's been even more of an exaggerated sense of that. But you could see four quarterbacks being the first four players off the draft and not really make that big of a reach. Also because of what you're going to have to pay that quarterback eventually. So everyone wants the rookie contract.
Yeah.
What we're seeing happen, I think, also we can't ignore, is how that same dynamic also becoming true with the wide receiver.
See,
because
that's
Devontae,
where I was going.
Devontae Smith just signed or agreed to a three-year, $75 million contract with the Eagles.
Yes.
We know that Justin Jefferson wants to be paid more than any other wide receiver in history in Minnesota. The Bears just traded for a guy pushing 30 or maybe on the other side of 30 in Keenan Allen, who's a $23 million cap hit.
Yep.
So not only the Bears, but other teams in the top 10 are going to see this trend and want to have the same logic apply to the wide receivers, because there's three of them in the top 10 that are potentially franchise caliber wide receivers: Marvin Harrison Jr., Neighbors from LSU, and Roma Dunze from Washington. So, Mully, could those three guys be after the four quarterbacks, because everyone's thinking the same thing? Premium positions. What do we want to get the most out of a guy while we can still afford him? Draft him now.
So, you know, we talked to Bigsy about this. If you look at the wide receiver position, they are now getting paid like pass rushers. They're not getting paid like quarterbacks. Quarterbacks make more money than anybody. And that money's going through the roof. And that's one of the reasons when the Bears do draft Caleb Williams, that begins their countdown to success, because it becomes a significantly it becomes a 5-year window, because you draft a guy in the first round, you get the 5-year deal, and that's how you'll be able to figure out what the timetable of winning is. But you also have to look at the wide receiver position now getting the same amount of money that premier pass rushers are. And there are not wide receivers moving. There aren't guys that are going to be available. I think Stephon Diggs would be the top wide receiver available next year. And again, you know, he's been on a couple teams, a few teams, and we'll see how he's perceived and how things go for him. You've got Keenan Allen, as you say, $23 million. Why haven't the Bears rushed to pay him? Well, I mean, they, you know, the $16 million cap hit from DJ Moore looks like a comparative bargain.
It's a bargain.
I don't think that Allen is necessarily overpaid. They knew what the contract was when they traded the fourth round pick for him. But I think that if you are looking, if there was one of those three wide receivers sitting there at nine, the added benefit of grabbing a guy like that is that that locks you into a 5-year contract. I think the ninth pick is something like the signing bonus would be like 3.9 million or something
bargain.
Like that. It's a
relative
really
bargain.
Low price for 5 years.
You don't want to have this conversation with Keenan Allen until you have to have this conversation with Keenan Allen.
Exactly.
And right now you're dealing with an incomplete set of facts.
See how he does.
Well, see how he does, but also who else is on the roster.
Oh, there you go.
And so you have the opportunity, and this is what this revolves around, is that if you get a wide receiver at number nine, not only does it help you get somebody to grow in concert with your rookie quarterback, and there are football reasons that are make it very easy to understand, but there are also financial ramifications that are easy to look at and say, oh, I get it now. And maybe it lessens your need and gives you more leverage when you go to the table with Keenan Allen if he wants to do that with the Chicago Bears. He may not want to be here beyond next year.
Who knows?
If he's looking at, oh, they drafted a guy at nine and they have DJ Moore for 2 more years, where do I fit in? What about mine? So all these things are things that put that conversation, I think, on the back burner, and you wonder how the Bears will bring all of that into their decision-making process on draft night when they are on the clock at number nine if they don't move up or if they don't trade down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting draft for wide receivers. There should be players throughout the draft, but there are three premier players. Mm-hmm. There are other guys that people love and think – may be underrated. The other kid at LSU, the, you know, speedster from Texas. I'm not sure about that one, but I do think that there are a lot of players that are on that kind of trajectory to get drafted in this draft, and the fact that there's depth to it may lead some teams to wait a bit, even with the way these receivers are going. And again, if a guy like Odunze falls to 9, you gotta tap into that. It was interesting talking to Biggsy because he basically said that this draft, when I first saw that, I thought, geez, has he heard something? Does he know they're trading? And he was kind of like, well, it's an exercise and you want to switch it up. Because you read that, though, and you think, this is a guy in the know.
Well, I know.
He must have heard something.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the case.
He didn't say that was the case, which I think is a good thing.
He didn't say that's the case because if the Bears trade down with Odunze on the board, I think that would be.
It would stink.
It would stink, and it also would.
Just be a track.
It would stink because of what we're talking about, because of the trend in the league. And the trend is paying wide receivers like pass rushers. And you get the sense that as the league moves toward more, it's more conducive to the offense. It always is going to favor the offense. You want people who are going to help you score points for a long time. And drafting a rookie wide receiver at 9 would allow you to do that.
And more so than ever, frankly.
More so than ever.
Think about how out of fashion the running back has become and how you're not paying running backs. The opposite has happened. The reaction to it is passing game more important, quarterbacks topping out, and now receivers need a lot of money.
No doubt about it.
Something to consider when you're looking at the draft not too far away. All right, we're going to get back to the Cubs. Cubs with a big win in the middle of the night, and we'll break it down for you. Couple of huge, huge plays in that game, not the least of which, a couple of them connected to a gentleman by the name of Nico Hoerner. We were talking about how do you put one player above others when you had a really good relief appearance from Keegan Thompson, you had a great start from Ben Brown, and then you got a guy that supplies not only the two base run to tie the game, but then the game-winning RBI.
Nico on the bases, Nico at the plate, Nico on the spot.
Mully and Haw on the score.
Mornings with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Hoerner trying to get a big lead at second. Cubs down to their last chance. And Happ takes a wild pitch. The ball bounces away. Hoerner around third. He's going to try to score. The throw to the plate. He scores! He scores. The ball game is tied at 2. Talkman goes to third. Alert heads-up base running by Nico Hoerner. Good base coaching by Willie Harris.
And then able to score the tying run there in the 9th. What was your read on the wild pitch? Because it didn't look like he even slowed down at third base.
Yeah, I mean, the second I saw a kick and the catcher didn't see the direction it went, I knew I had a chance, and I was a little bit on the fence, but Willie Harris was very dramatic in his pointing of home plate, and it all worked out.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the voice of Nico Hoerner, and he did score on that two-base sprint diving slide to get the tying run. He will be on today at 2:30 with Parkins and Spiegel, and they'll also have Jed Hoyer today at 3 p.m.
So great day.
Big Cubs day for those guys.
Great day to have Nico after getting that
perfect
tying run when he just uses speed and instincts to do that.
Incredible.
And then driving in the winning run with a kind of a higher fastball, and he just poked it and scored the run. And Cubs win, and they're third in a row after, you know, hitting some struggles. Saturday night before the late Shota, out in Seattle, Shota Imanaga was very good again.
Yes.
He kind of stopped the bleeding a little bit. That's what your best pitchers do, and he's been their best starting pitcher. And then Sunday, they win the finale, and then they come into Arizona. They needed that one. I don't know how they won that one, but good teams find a way. 10-6 now. Biggest development of the Cubs, I think, in the past week, I think most people would agree, Michael Busch.
Oh.
Emerging as a power threat, homering in 5 straight games, being everything you wanted him to be when you got him from the Dodgers. Good trade by giving up 2 young prospects for a guy who was blocked in L.A.
Yeah, pretty amazing the way, the consistency that he has shown as a power hitter. I think we knew he had power, and I think we knew he looked pretty good in spring training. But I think that the consistency of his swings, mm-hmm. his at-bats have been excellent. And then you look at the fact that he's homered for five straight games. Again, that is now a five-man group for the Cubs that have done that in team history. The great Hack Wilson, one of the great power hitters of his day. You look at Rhino, Sammy Sosa, Christopher Morel, mm-hmm. and now you got two of those guys. Morel is slowed down a little bit from the hot start that
he might
had.
Heat up again, though.
Oh, I think
streaky
he will.
Hitter.
Yeah, people. That's how hitting is. But I think that Michael Busch has been unbelievably consistent.
Interesting story because Michael Busch, high school quarterback, mm-hmm. led his team to a state final. Great athlete. You don't look at first baseman, and sometimes you get the prototype of like, okay, stationary guys, not great runners, not great athletes, perhaps. He played second base in the Dodgers system. He was an all-everything shortstop coming out of high school. He was a prospect that was a middle infielder, converted to first base with maybe – increase and hasten his path to the majors, and he was blocked in LA, so he traded to the Cubs. He looks and carries himself like a guy that could play about anywhere.
And Nico Horner, Stanford man.
Stanford man.
That's how you outsmart the opponent.
Well, he did that last night. He never stopped.
No, he never
stopped. He didn't hesitate.
Yep.
And you heard Pat Hughes there. Cubs were down to their last out.
That's it.
It looked bleak. And then all of a sudden people are celebrating. So good victory for the Cubs. Bigger, another development which can't go unnoticed. Keegan Thompson.
Yeah.
Coming up from the minors to replace Jose Quas. He answered that question.
Hate to say that we needed to see the end of Jose Quas.
We did, though.
But boy,
for now,
he had to go.
For now.
And
he might be back.
Keegan Thompson, your guy, you were calling for him last week, comes up and he doesn't go one inning. He goes two innings in relief. And that was awesome.
He gets the first victory.
Hard to win on
the
road
season.
With the extra man.
It is. You know, you don't expect that because there's always going to be an advantage to the home team. That guy's already, he's 180 feet from scoring a run and winning a game if it's tied, and then you never feel that comfortable. So the Cubs find a way to eke one out in Arizona. Keegan Thompson, two innings, two strikeouts, a walk, did not give up a hit, and he gave Ben Brown a reason to feel very good about his outing. Ben Brown, before that, six innings, one hit against that team. He walked a couple guys, gave up a hit, and they scored a run, but Ben Brown has been everything and more. Since that first shaky debut against the Rangers, they could not have expected much more from this rookie. Is he a rookie, Dustin? Is that okay to call Ben Brown a rookie?
Dustin will agree with Ben Brown, but he will not allow you to call Michael Busch a rookie.
Let me tell you about Michael Busch's qualifications. This is what a player has to do to be considered a rookie in MLB. 130, unless he's passed these thresholds.
Yes.
130 at-bats or 50 innings pitched. 45 total days on an active major league roster. Michael Busch last year played in 27 games, had 72 at bats for the Dodgers. Neither crosses the threshold. He's a rookie.
And Dustin, you are aware that if you're in the top three of rookie of the year, and I'm not saying he is, but he looks like he could be.
He could be.
You then get draft pick compensation. So if you want to argue the rookie thing, we're happy to do that next, but you're basically giving away a draft pick. Just so you know, this is the way you're approaching the world, and I think it's wrong.
Well, maybe we should listen to why he is a candidate next.
Okay, we'll do that. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.